Sometimes if you find a great recipe, it's helpful to share it with others. Likewise, if a family has 10 children and they all are ready for college by the age of 12, there are some lessons we can all learn about how to do that as well. So today we visit with Kip and Mona Lisa Harding. On our show, they lift up the curtain on their secrets of remarkable academic successes with their children. Welcome to Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis, your host. As a writer, speaker, and former legislator, we discuss limiting government, fiscal responsibility, and fair taxation. I'm a mother of seven and a wife of one for over three decades, so I bring you my personal experience. And now it's time for Homefront with Cynthia Davis. Welcome to Homefront. Today we have a very special show with some very special guests. Kip and Mona Lisa Harding are joining us today. They wrote the book called The Brainy Bunch Book. They have 10 children, of which 7 have already started college by the time they were 12. They're here to share their insights with us today. Good morning, Kip and Mona Lisa.
Good morning.
Am I supposed to call you doctor yet, or are we almost there?
Oh, not yet.
Your story is intriguing. You have 10 children between the ages of 3 and 26, which is a 23-year spread. That's very impressive. I actually have 7 children, and I have a 22-year spread. So given that you squeezed 3 more children in there than me, I think that's impressive. Your website is thebrainybunchbook.com. You have an amazing story, so I want you to share it with us first. What made you decide to homeschool?
Well, I did meet some homeschoolers along the way and were impressed with their desire to want to take responsibility and believing that, you know, these kids are ours and God gave them to us, and, you know, why should we hand them over to the institution to educate them? And also, I did chicken out and send them for a couple years to school, even though I wanted to homeschool. I was afraid, and like a lot of moms are, not sure I could do it. Sent them to school. My oldest went through the third grade, and during those whole 3 years, I missed her all the time, was upset about all the homework she had in the evening, felt like they were learning a lot of things that were just busy work, you know, lots of common reasons that people have, and then finally got the nerve up, was able to quit my part-time nursing job and bring them home. It wasn't an overnight decision. No, I was doing daycare Monday through Friday at home with a toddler and then working nursing job on the weekend, just kind of trying to make ends meet, and felt like I was stretched. But when Kip went back into active duty Air Force, that was my opportunity to, you know, stop doing daycare and stop working on the weekends and just pour myself into homeschooling.
Great. And Kip, tell us about your career.
I actually started out Army after high school, did 3 years, and went to college, did all. Well, I was a warrant officer in the National Guard, went to college, and switched to the Air Force, was flying helicopters for a while, and then I did acquisitions, and then I got out in 2007, and I've had the private sector and low-level government jobs since then, and so my career has gone up and down, but all the while, I've always enjoyed my family life and my marriage with my wife, and being a homeschool dad.
But something I'd like to add to that is from the day I was pregnant with our first child, Kip started taking college classes and using his GI Bill and tuition assistance. Because it was 18 and enlisted when he went in, he knew that he wanted to get a college degree. And even though these babies were coming every two and a half years, so college wasn't really an option for me at the time, Kip was chipping away at it, and he was, I think, 27 when he got his bachelor's, 30-something, 35 when he got his master's, and now he's working on a doctorate. So he has done it the hard way, you know, with a family to raise, working full-time, and so his idea is get it done while you're early, and that's what we share with our kids because he's done it the hard way.
I understand that. We did, too. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but I totally understand. With our firstborn son, even, I had the same thoughts you had. I don't want to ruin the first one, even though the first one is kind of like the practice child. I put my kids in public school as well. And it took him getting beaten up every day in the boys' bathroom before I realized, wait a minute, this is not serving him well. The lessons he's learning from public school are going to devastate his ability to be successful in life. I had taught him all his life, you don't hit, punch, kick, be nice, be nice, be nice. And what he was learning is that the guilty get away scot-free if nobody sees it, and there's no reason to do your best because appealing to the authorities doesn't work. All these lessons were going to be devastating if they carried out. So I, too, with my firstborn, he finished fourth grade, and then I said, that's enough of that. So you took your children out of public school, and you started beginning with day one when you said, I'm going to educate them myself. Where did that all begin, and how did you even know where to start?
Yeah, this whole time I did have a good friend named Lisa, and she had seven children, and she was homeschooling. And I told her, I'm going to do it. And she advised me very wisely because she knew my personality was, hey, just go get some Alpha Omega workbooks. You can get the fourth grade math, fourth grade language arts, fourth grade reading, fourth grade history, you know, in each level. And you can just, you don't have to do any teacher planning if you don't want to. You just hand out the workbooks. And you know you're covering all your bases. And I also started like June 1st, you know, summertime, because my idea was I'm going to get my 272 days in June. I'm going to start on June 1st. I'm going to be ahead because we were going to be military. We were going to be moving a lot. I always wanted to feel like I could take time off when I needed and we would be ahead. And then babies were coming along and, you know, you have to take time off for that. And so that was my first thought. But once these kids started doing the workbooks, some of them liked them, some of them thought they were boring. I started reading history books out loud to them so that I could do kind of multi-level teaching where even the kindergartner and the toddler could listen in. And I realized I enjoyed that much more than the workbooks. And so the process started to evolve. And I noticed they were soaking in and learning a lot just from the reading of the living history books and the historical fiction and the biographies. And so it wasn't so important that they knew all the dates, but they knew who the famous people were and who they were, what they did, why they did what they did, and that was the learning that stuck. And so pretty soon the bigger kids are reading more on their own, and they're deciding they want to read different things, not just what mom's picking for them. And that's what we started doing, the interest-led learning and letting them read what they wanted. And in the book it details pretty well how the oldest one got ahead in math and how Kip decided she could take an online dual enrollment class because she's outdoing us anyways, and boom, she earns college credit, and there's no going back after that. So that was the short version of how they just accelerated through, and by 12 we're taking dual enrollment classes or just going straight into college in some cases.
I read on one of your biographies of yourself that you don't consider yourself highly organized. Is that still true?
Yes, that is true.
Yeah, my husband had to answer. Yeah, I think I'm a list maker, and I put the important things at the top of the list, and there's a lot of things on that list that don't get done and get shoved down. And so, but instead of feeling defeated and focusing on all the things that aren't done and things that are falling apart and messy in the house, I try and focus on, we got the important things done.
At first, she was trying to recreate school, you know, public school, and it just wasn't working for her. So when we realized, you know, we're going to do this, what works for us, and start to tailor things for our children, they just started to accelerate really fast.
So going into the tidiness of the house, how do you handle the chores? Surely with 10 children, if everybody doesn't do something, it can deteriorate very quickly. What do you do with teaching them that component of it's academics are fine, but there are other rudimentaries involved in basic living?
Yeah, well, it comes down to I can't concentrate if I'm sitting in a mess. You know, it's just I can't focus on the academics. So theoretically, you know, we wake up and if there's dishes in the sink, you know, Mariana has decided now in her little lifetime to be the dishwasher. She likes that. Used to be we would just trade, you know, 1 week, rotate the list around. And then Katrina is currently the sweeper and empties out the trash cans, and everyone's supposed to be responsible for their room and their laundry. And thankfully, we have two sets of washing machines, one upstairs, one in the basement, and they're supposed to, you know, if they wake up and their clothes aren't clean, well, you know, that's on them. The little ones I can take care of, but there's kind of even a buddy system with the laundry. It's like, you know, we've paired up a big kid with a little kid, and if they can reach the knobs and read the washing machine, we let them go ahead and start doing the dishwasher and the laundry as soon as possible, because they see I can't do it all.
Good going.
Have
you ever had a child who's been uncooperative?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's always someone with some attitude, but, you know, they go to the principal's office and he takes care of it.
There's even a system to that. You know, we do use time out, and I try to tell her often I'm the last resort, so that the children learn to respect her and, you know, to be firm when she needs to be firm. And you need the calmness in the home, because you're not just a normal home. You're homeschooling, and there's learning going on. If you ever find yourself raising your voice, you've already lost control. That's not the way to do things.
What does the principal do in the principal's office? How often do you get a student in your office?
It's usually the bathroom is where they're doing time out. And it's, you know how that works. It's one minute for each year. But, of course, they would never think of not going, because that's when corporal punishment comes. That's just a little whack on the bottom. But, you know, there's nothing you can do really after that, right? So, I mean, you got to teach them now so they don't grow up and end up in jail, and then they'll really be doing time. So we're really relaxed and easygoing. We have to use the carrot rather than the stick approach. So it's all incentivized by, hey, if you get this done, maybe we can go to a movie, or maybe we can have an ice cream or something nice. Go play outside, you know. We usually send them outside by Moise at 2:30, and every day. And then in the summer months, when the other kids are out of school, it's a little less threatening, so we can let them out, you know, a lot more often. But we don't like to flaunt the children around town, you know, when you're homeschooling. It's your right to do that, but we just would rather not gain the attention of somebody that's not minding their own business.
That's very wisely spoken. Do you live in a subdivision?
We're right in the middle of the city, really.
Yeah,
we're
suburbia. We have a garden district next to us. And
yeah, we have a very busy street out front. So, you know, if our kids were in the front yard all day, there's lots of traffic in the front. We're just minutes away from the state capitol here in Montgomery. So, thankfully, we have a backyard, but, you know, you just never know which neighbor is going to decide they don't like you. Or, you know, or why are those kids outside all day long? You know, that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, we are all countercultural. Those who are submerged in a secular worldview cannot handle us. They don't know what to do with that. But I'd like to hear your thoughts on ADHD, attention deficit hyperactive disorder. More and more kids today are being diagnosed with it. On the other hand, some experts say it doesn't exist. It sounds like your children have the ability to be hyper-focused in one area. Have you ever had a child who didn't want to learn?
I'll give you a personal story and my thoughts on the whole issue. My oldest daughter, we have a mental illness in my family. My mother has it. My brother had it, schizophrenia. But it didn't show up until age 25 in my daughter. So she was already finished with college. She had two master's degrees. She was out in California. She was doing fine. You know, not a drug person or anything like that. And then all of a sudden, she started, I call it falling off a sanity cliff. She just wasn't thinking clearly and getting paranoid. So we had to get her professional help. and taking medication, and then she was responded so well, she was just back to normal. And then about 90 days, you know, we slowly weaned her off her medication with her doctor's advice, and then the medication left her bloodstream, and then she all of a sudden it happened again a second time where she got paranoid. So then we put her back on it, and she's doing fine today. You would not know it if you were talking to her and she was sitting here. She's perfectly normal. She's back in college working on a doctorate and interacts well, has all the social skills. It was a genetic component. Something went on there. We don't know what. And so she's on medication now. But when she was young, we just didn't see it. I missed a few signs as she was having mental problems, but, you know, she was an adult, really, 25. And then, now for the youngsters, boys are different from girls, and people really need to understand that, because they put these kids in a classroom together, and boys just don't sit still well. They've got to be actively doing things. And in fact, even as adults, you know, women can talk, sit around, have nice chats for quite a lengthy time. Men tend to want to be doing something together. That's their idea of being together. So we're just a little bit different the way God designed us. And so that you want to help children thrive. And if you're taking away their recess and their lunch is, you know, indoors, and then your after-school plans are more indoor functions for...
That's a good point. I have a child with ADHD. He was in public school, and that is their tool that they used to try and control him. If he didn't get all of his work done, then he lost recess. To take a child who already has a lot of energy and say, now your punishment is you don't get to go outside with the other children, that is not helping anything, especially not that poor teacher who then has him the whole afternoon, and now he missed recess. How valuable is his schoolwork going to be now? So I appreciate your information. I'd like to talk about emotional intelligence for a minute. You mentioned that on one of your interviews. How does that play into their ability to learn?
Emotional intelligence, I think of my dad a lot, a very intelligent man. On the emotional side, relationships, I think he struggles a little bit, and I love him very much. And I see that in a lot of people, where they don't know how to love others, and they have put up a lot of fake walls.
Do you take time away from your academics to do character education?
I wanted to add something to emotional intelligence. We absolutely do, because a couple of things. You know, you can your kid can be brilliant academically and, you know, go through calculus, but not know right from wrong, not know how to talk to others, not be empathetic and socially aware. And so we feel like that's just as important. You know, if you take a really smart kid and he's young and you put him in a college classroom, but he doesn't have the social awareness to know when to speak up, when to be quiet, what to say, what's appropriate, he's going to embarrass himself in class. And so so there are parents, you know, who call us and email us for consulting, and they say, my kid is so smart, I think they can go to college early, but they're shy, or they say things that are inappropriate, or you know, they're not sure how they're going to handle themselves in a classroom. We think that's just important, because there's no doubt that they can do the work at a young age academically, but can they hold their own in a conversation with adults? So that's part of the emotional intelligence, is knowing when and what to say at an appropriate time, and having that filter, you know, when not to say something. And then also you mentioned the spiritual component. You know, if they're totally brilliant academically, but they're just not kind to people and they don't have good intentions, then, you know, what's the point of them going to college early and having advanced degrees if they just don't have a moral compass? And, you know, a lot of what we're teaching our kids is if God has given you these gifts, how can you use them for His glory? And we really emphasize that. You know, our book is faith-based, and we talk to our kids about their calling in life so that they can see, oh, it's not just about me and how smart I am. It's I'd been given something and this great opportunity to homeschool, finish college early. What am I going to do with that? How can I give back? So it's kind of all wrapped up together, and I think Kip wants to say something.
I was just going to say we went to the Duggar's wedding, their third daughter, and on emotional intelligence, you know, they don't have relationships with the way most folks do with dating. They just do courting, and it really is. It was a beautiful thing being at their wedding, just seeing how much they love each other, and how that model is wonderful. And I see them as a model family. I very, very much respect how the dad runs things and the mother's love and care for her children. And so I like to see the way people do things differently, but it's okay to be a little bit strict on them when it comes to relationships.
I wasn't going to get into courting, but since you brought it up, the problem that a lot of parents have today is if your child agrees that we're going to do courting and it agrees to wait until dad and mom give the green light, it will work beautifully. What I'm seeing, even in church families, even in homeschooled families, is occasionally you'll have a child who gives herself away, and she gave herself away a long time before mom and dad may have even known about the relationship. How can you fix things when you have a child who doesn't have the same values as the parents?
Yeah, we definitely know that courting is a high standard, and we talk about it enough, and we see the biblical references to it, and our kids know where we're coming from. But some of our kids have gotten old enough that they had made some decisions on their own. And for instance, our oldest daughter is 26, and she is choosing to do a Christian mingle online, which is not traditional. You know, that's not the way it was done 100 years ago, but that's, you know, 2014. And we kind of like that model. She's getting to chat with young Christian gentleman online, and I think, you know, at 26 she would think, does she really need to you know, answer to her father? Well, out of respect for her dad, the answer is yes, because she wouldn't dream of entering into a relationship with some guy unless she has her dad's approval, because she has respect for her father. So it's not at this age, it's not you must do this because you're living in a home. I mean, she's 26. You know, so at this age, it's really either she's been trained right and has respect for her parents or not. You know, either you've done your job or you haven't, because it's kind of a little late now. So so her, you know, we anticipate that when she does, and she has met, you know, guys and brought them to the home, and they didn't really develop in anything, but it was always her intent, you know, to bring them home or meet them at church, you know, first. Our second daughter actually met her husband abroad, studying abroad, and then continued emailing back and forth without telling us. And then one day, she was just feeling so guilty that she was emailing this guy, that she just burst out into tears, and we're like, what's wrong? You know, she had this great confession, and it was that she was basically falling in love, emailing back and forth. And, you know, our advice was, great, you need to find out if he's the one and get married if he's the one, you know, because we don't believe in long distance, long relationships, long engagements. You know, our experience is that you meet the one that God has for you, and we need to make sure that they're saved, and we believe in getting married young. That's just, you know, our belief. And so thankfully she was able to get married at 19, and it was a blessing that she was done with her college. And the third daughter's in the Navy. She's 23. She's a physician. I surely hope that she is mature enough now that she could pick a suitor. And if she's stationed off in Hawaii, I don't really know what courtship would look like for her. I don't see her. She's not dating around at all, because that's not how they were raised. but it's a unique situation, her being in the military in a way. I think she might probably need help from her church, you know, like a pastor or a mentoring couple that could supervise a relationship. And so it's going to look different for our kids than the Duggar kids, because our kids are out there, out in college. They are career women, but yet we believe in the biblical purity and all that. So just we're kind of out there in that sense, kind of different.
It is different. I have a daughter who's 28, and she's working on a master's degree out of state. As precious as she's been to us, she's never had a serious relationship with anyone. That is an interesting question, because children are getting married a lot later today. It used to be that the norm, the average, was 20 when you got married, or 22 at the oldest. If you got out of college and you're 24, you're getting right up there. I mean, so here we have people waiting so long. And then there are a lot of people who are choosing never to marry, more than ever in our nation's history. What is precipitating that?
Times are hard. People can't afford to have a home or a car in every garage and that sort of thing, old American dream. 20. And the 20-somethings, they're moving back in. It's sort of a revolving door, because it's just hard to go out and find a well-paying job to take care of yourself and a family.
Hi, friends. Do you like what you're hearing? Then go to my website. It's CynthiaDavis.net, and sign up for my newsletter. You'll get all this information and more when you sign up for my email reminding you of when you'll hear another podcast and letting you know what's coming up next. Besides, we always have a little bit of humor at the end, so go to CynthiaDavis.net and stay in the loop. For those of you who don't like email, go to my Facebook page. It's called Homefront with Cynthia Davis. And make sure you click the like button. That way, you'll have a convenient way to see what we're doing and to get the word when another podcast is released. Shine, let it shine before men. That's Homefront with Cynthia Davis on Facebook. My website is CynthiaDavis.net. That's where we keep all our good stuff. So if you want to get our newsletter and find more podcasts, go to CynthiaDavis.net. Hey, let's stay in touch. Since you mentioned the electronics and online dating, our firstborn is now 32 years old. And when he was born, cell phones, computers, the Wii and the Xbox, none of that had even been invented yet. Now they're everywhere, including all this online predators. What do you let your children watch on TV, or do you let them be on the internet, and how do you control that?
Well, we did have a close encounter with a predator-type individual, and I don't want to get into the details, but you do have to be careful. But at the same time, we don't want to be a house full of rules. You can't, you know, you can't do this, can't do that. Like I said earlier, we like the carrot approach rather than the stick approach. And you have to train these children when they grow up. They have to have these God's word in their heart, right? So they know to look away. We call it the Puma is. Personally unsettling material, you know, when it comes up on your computer or on the TV, you got to be able to switch it off or change it. So that is our approach, not the modern. There's some high-tech monitoring systems that parents can have. We don't go down that road yet. We don't ever have to. Just try to encourage them.
Our founding fathers viewed education as a luxury. Many of our early founding fathers did amazing things at remarkably young ages. Even Abraham Lincoln only had 9 months of formal education, and yet he went on to be a lawyer and president of the nation.
So many people know that. Surprising.
So we're in a point now where education dominates the entire family between school and homework that kids come home from. You don't barely even have time to do anything else. And a lot of children don't enjoy becoming educated. They've lost their love for learning. Has that ever happened to you?
Our approach is how we combat that. When we see them maybe getting bored with, you know, why do I have to learn this stuff? Why do I have to learn geometry? You know, that's when we show them, well, if you want to be an architect, you need to get through this geometry so that you can get on to other things, algebra 2, physics, because it relates to what you have chosen. You know, you've told us you want to be an architect, and when you connect the dots for them and it makes sense and you let them get on with it quickly, then we're tapping into that motivation. If I think the problem with what you're talking about is we say, okay, great, little Johnny, you want to be a doctor, but you can't go anywhere if you're 17 or 18, and you're way smarter than I am now, but you still have to keep chipping away at this workbooks, worksheets, same stuff you did last year over and over and over because you have to hang out at home till you're 17 or 18. I could see how kids could get discouraged. But when you say, do A, B, and C, and you can finish high school and start taking that class in your area of interest, they're highly motivated. And so that's how we deal with that.
So do you let them pursue some subjects and let other subjects slide? Yeah, I've got a son. He has what's called an allergic reaction to math. Now, I know you've got some math experts, but what do you do if you get to that point where a child can't handle one subject?
Well, I always, first and foremost, as a dad, I try to have a vision, not only for the home, but understand each individual's vision. Where do they want to be when they grow up? And what do they want to be? Not what do I want them to be? What do they want to be? So if I understand a child doesn't like math, I try to eliminate a career field that might be math intensive and figure out, well, what is it that they really like? What makes them blossom? So then, but I know they also can't be taken in life, right? Because they have to have some level of math skills. So I always apply what it is they want to do, but apply the math to it. So I lump that in such a way that all the math problems they're doing will relate to their interests.
Kip, have you ever had a child who didn't have a passion for some field of study?
My son, I mean, it's tough to narrow down because he wanted to be a director of movies and not an actor. And usually, you know, you're an actor first, then a director at some point, right? And then, you know, figuring out, well, where can he go to college to learn such a thing as that? And we ended up, he took an English degree for his undergrad and worked along, did really well. He had a minor, I think, in film studies. And then, but when he graduated, along the way, he had a change of heart. He decided, well, now I'm kind of interested in computers. So he decided when it was time to apply for a master's degree, he switched fields entirely and got a degree, a master's in computer science. So, but all the while, I'm encouraging him and trying to help him along in that counseling aspect, you know, of what works for you. So, but when you leave a trail of degrees, this is a good thing because employers know if you start something, you can finish. They can see, you know, you work hard to earn the degrees. And so the education is never wasted for a boy or for a girl. He was kind of a little bit floundering in that vision of what he wanted to do, but that was okay as long as he was working positively towards some end.
Our fifth son, Keith, was interested in, you know, for a while he was a very shy introvert. I kind of worried, you know, is this going to be the one child that doesn't go to college by 12 because he wasn't coming out like the others and saying, this is what I want to be when I grow up. It wasn't until he asked us to get the broken violin in the closet fixed and interested in some lessons, and he would just practice and practice. And it wasn't us saying, you must practice 2 hours a day. It was just, he really wanted to learn how to play that violin. And he did, and he and had a natural ability for it. And Kip and I are out musical, so we're thinking this is coming from God, because we do not, we're not the ones, you know, pushing this. And so in his young life, we thought, you know, you can take, once you've outgrown your tutor, and he did quickly, now you can go to Faulkner University and be instructed by the professionals there. And so it was kind of a natural next step. It's not, he didn't say, I want to get a PhD in music. It was just, I can take music classes at the campus, start working on a music degree. Maybe you're not that crazy about the math. We'll put that off a little. You don't have to do that the first semester. He understood that he would have to, I think, go through finite math for a music degree, but we showed him, you're not going to have to take calculus if you don't want to, you know, because you're going to be concentrating in music. And so he didn't hate math, but it's not like he excelled in that area, but he understood that he had to get a minimum proficiency to graduate high school. He obviously needed to be proficient enough to get a minimum score on the ACT to get into Faulkner University, so he did study his math for that purpose. And then once he was in college, he took a remedial math class and then the college level class. So they understand that, you know, you don't have to go all the way through calculus for some degrees, but others you do. And the ones that know that they're going to have to, or, you know, work a little harder on that. But in his case, it just kind of, he kind of fell into the music thing quite naturally. It was a smooth transition, and he did just graduate in May at 15.
Great.
And his story is kind of interesting, because he was classically trained, and out of, if it was me, I would have just had him do country music or rock and roll, but to have him want to do classical music, and Mona Lisa and I having no training whatsoever or be able to train him, it was just really neat to watch him do it on his own. So we taught him to learn, and he could do it.
I don't know how familiar you are with Common Core, but this is sweeping the nation, and it's bringing a lot of angst out of the citizens. People are angry and feeling like, why do we need national standards, or why is the federal government dictating what we do in our state? Common Core is a low set of standards. There's nothing stopping any school district, private school or homeschool, from exceeding those standards. So looking at it from a public policy perspective, it seems like Common Core would be irrelevant to the typical family if your children have already gone over the benchmark. Do you have any comments to make about that?
Yeah, I have to start with, there's something called the Hatch Act. So, you know, as a low-level government employee, I can't talk on political issues, but I will, so I'm just talking as a person. And my family, it makes sense to me, if I want a suit to fit, I got to tailor it. And if I think a one-size-fits-all is going to work for my family, I'm fooling myself. And I just, from personal experience, absolutely say the closer you can tailor an education to a child, the better they will be. And so I encourage folks to do that, and if you think the government is successful in areas and that they will be successful in educating your child, more power to you. But for me and my family, no. And I don't even know where to begin. I know it started with a lot of governors getting together, and they decided that what was best for the country's kids. I've been watching little cases like, you know, soda, where in New York City you couldn't have over so many ounces that people could drink, and I wonder about our freedoms, or if a law is passed where, because everyone's kids have to have shots in order to go to New York public school. I really don't understand that, because if your kid has shots, then they're protected. And if my kids don't have shots, what do you care? It's my family's choice. So it's almost, in a sense, it's like communist thinking that everybody has to be the same. So I just believe in tailoring, but I'm speaking as an individual and for my family. I just have to qualify that.
Right. And most of the people complaining about Common Core believe that it's going to lower school district standards, or in some cases it may raise standards, but it came about because of the mass market approach to education. If you're going to take a classroom of 25 or 30 students, how can anybody know what's going on in the minds of each individual student? And even though homeschool is not for everybody, and I don't believe we'll ever be able to get rid of public school, even if we started to privatize it, the bureaucrats are too strong to allow that to ever happen. But at the same time, we still get whatever we tolerate. What do you tolerate in your family, and how do you define what your common family core standards should be?
Well, because it's what is best for each individual child, I'm looking for the child to, the children vote with their feet. They're very honest. You know, when they cry, do they run to mommy or do they run to dad? I hope they run to mommy first, because she spends the most time with them, and that's beautiful to me that they go to her. I don't want them to not have mom there to run to some professional educator. Molly, she wants to say something.
Yeah, about also, I think you're asking us what our standard is. And I mean, sure, I could be worried about are my kids meeting the minimum, but we're too busy looking at which college are they going to pick and which degree plan are they going to follow. And so our standard is taking that 9, 10, 11-year-old, talking about finishing the high school requirements according to our state and looking at what they need to get into college, what ACT, SAT score, and working on that. So we're not so worried about minimums as we are in what does it take to get into college and how excited are you and can you see yourself in the classroom. And, you know, so far, 7 out of 10 kids have said, yeah, let me go, let's go, tell me what I need to do, I'm excited. And so we're not so focused on minimums as their future and getting to that college campus. And that's what our kids are excited about. And I think if more people would be maybe allowing their kids to accelerate even a little bit, they don't have to do college by 12, but just letting their kids graduate a little early, maybe they wouldn't be so resistant to school, like I mentioned before, being in school till they're 17 or 18. You know, maybe that's a little too long, and kids can do more at a younger age.
So your advice is for the parents to look at what their state requires for high school graduation and then try and tailor your program to fit that?
Yeah, they think their child is emotionally mature enough, yes. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said, there are all those parents that think, oh, my kid is just brilliant academically, but I can't trust them in the classroom. I don't know what they're going to say. I don't know if they're going to burst out into tears, you know. So obviously you need to make sure they're emotionally, you know, ready for that. There are a lot of kids that are.
Well, moms and dads, like for us, we balance each other out well. Mona Lisa has some things about her personality that are very well, and I have some things about my personality. So together, we come up with a parent set that works. But I do feel that if you can use any rules of thumb, sometimes moms will smother their children. And sometimes a dad needs to step in and say, hey, we've got to see if this little chick can fly. It's time to push them out of the nest a little bit, you know, see what they can do. And so together we do that, and it works. But so for dads, they really got to be a part of this whole thinking and be that encouragement, be that visionary. Say to the mom, because it really, that's who you're talking to, is dad telling the mom, I think they're ready, they can do it. Because a mom will get comfortable. A mom will say, okay, my child's all right, which is right where they are, and years will go by. And so, again, that's what we're doing.
At least that's always how it is with us. I'm the one that says, are you sure this child is going to be able to do it too? You know, because I'm naturally protective, and I get a little anxious, but my husband's the one that points out their strengths and gives the kids the pep talks. And once the kid starts speaking confidently too, it's like, yeah, I want to try it. You know, then we all get on board. But so it works for us.
Thank you. Well, you've provided a valuable service to all the families in the entire country because you've proven that it's possible, that it's not some anomaly that with one child, that it has to do with the structure you've put in place, and you've boosted the image of homeschoolers across the country for all those grandparents who think the child is not going to learn anything at home. You've blown that myth. So if you were going to give one piece of advice to all the parents across the nation, what would you say?
Well, I like to say, when you love somebody, you can't go wrong. If you're loving this child, you're going to be there for them. We tell them, we laugh with them, we cry with them, and we mean it, you know, when the time is right. So don't worry. Keep loving your child, listening to them. They'll tell you what they want to do, and just take it serious. Yeah, don't hold them back. And in the age of information age, things that might sound kind of bizarre and crazy may just end up being a career field for them.
Is there another book coming out that we need to know about?
Well, we're working on it. Katrina is starting at Fox University this fall, our seventh child, and she's 11. And so we will just continue. I'll continue my journaling like I did with the first book. And so many things come up, you know, issues that we start thinking about that we hadn't thought about before, and we just start writing and writing. And so hopefully by the time we get through children 8, 9, and 10, we'll have another book.
And the website is thebrainybunchbook.com. And thank you so much. This has been very inspirational, having a chance to really learn about the inner details. People can get the details on your website, thebrainybunchbook.com. And thank you for being our guest today. You are both amazing, and you have provided us with a great glimpse into what can be. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
And you do consulting on your website. If anybody needs private consulting, go to thebrainybunchbook.com and make an appointment. Thank you for inspiring us. It's a pleasure. You have a nice afternoon now.
Hey, thank you. God bless you. Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye. This has been another edition of Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis and hope you enjoyed our program. Please join us next week when we offer another infusion of truth, honesty, and solutions that will grow people bigger and shrink government smaller. Thank you for joining us. See you next week. Yeah.